life gets messy. Spills, stains, and kid chaos. But with Anabe, cleaning up is easy. Our sofas are fully machine washable, inside and out, so you never have to stress about messes again. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Get early access to Black Friday pricing right now. Sofas start at just $699. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Hold hands and close your eyes. It's 12:30, and you're listening to the Ghost Story Pass.
Welcome to the Ghost Story, guys. I'm Brendan Storr.
I'm Ian Gibbs.
And this is a show where we talk about spooks, specters, and all the other things watching us from the shadows beyond the campfire. Some conversations only make sense after the sun has set, and this is most definitely one. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 81. And we're coming to you from that tiny mountain cabin you dream about, but can never quite reach. How you doing, Ian?
I'm doing pretty good, Brendan. How are you?
It's so weird you're not here. I don't like it.
I know it is weird.
Yes, it is strange. And let's just get this out of the way now. Everyone knows what's going on in the world. We're not going to get into it.
No.
We're in fact not even going to name it because Jesus, it's we're all tired of hearing about it.
Yeah.
However, it's unavoidable. So we're going to call it turducken.
Perfect.
Yeah. Turducken. Because much like turducken, no one really wants it. It's gross. It's a bad idea. Like
pretty
fucking
much.
In a public bathroom. It's not something anyone should do.
No.
I mean, well, okay. Maybe I got a bit ahead of myself. Anyways, not important. Not important.
Please stop.
Yes, I shall. But... because of turducken, we can't be in the same place, obviously.
No, you've been home for how long?
Almost 2 full weeks.
Wow.
My wife had a possible exposure while at work, and so we've had to stay home and lock things down. And so I have not left the house, apart from a very, very brief walk across the hall to check the mailbox, since 2 weeks.
Wow.
I'm going a little crazy again.
I was
going to
say, how has that been?
I mean, Pornhub is offering free premium for a month, so that's pretty nice.
Everyone pulling together in these dark times.
Well, they're pulling something. But anyway, sorry. There's going to be a theme here, folks. I'm not going to lie to you.
Oh, no.
This is what happens. This is the real cabin fever.
Thank God you weren't locked up on your own. It would have been even worse.
I'd have tendonitis, bursitis. Anyways, moving on. Yeah, so this is the very first time we've ever had to do this. We have never not been in the same room recording the show.
It's true. We've talked about this.
We have, yeah.
Things happening or us being in different places, but we've never actually had to do it.
No, and on the bright side, we've sort of prepped for this in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we've had these reflection filters, so we actually don't... I was going to say we can't look at each other, but I think it's more we don't have to look at each other.
There you go.
Yeah. Protecting
it's just kinder face. All around, yeah.
That's right. A kinder, gentler ghost story, guys.
Exactly.
But yeah, so it's weird. So folks, we're on a little bit of an adventure. You're along with us, and that's the important thing, is we're doing this together.
Exactly. And I like what we're doing today. I'm excited for this show.
Yes, basically I've been locked in an anxiety spiral for 2 weeks.
Right.
So there's been no work
lots
getting
of time
done.
To catch up on email.
Yes. Watch lots of movies. I think I watched 5 movies the other day.
Oh, in one day?
Oh yeah.
Wow. No, not me. I'm still working.
Yeah,
but
that's
at home.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
So, but as I waited for signs of my body to betray me, I just, not much time for anything else.
It's a daily thing for me.
Yeah, that's true. Old shitty body Gibbs.
There you go.
But yeah, so what we've done is we've prepared another selection of listener stories, and some of these are, well, they're all really great, and they're still from back in November. So if you've sent us stories and you thought, why haven't those sons of bitches read it yet?
We're so far behind. Please don't feel bad. We're yes. just so far behind.
Well, we want to balance, you know, listener stories with our sort of special topics where we, you know, do a dive into, you know, one thing or another.
Right. And, like our Ireland show. Do you want to talk about that some more?
We'll talk about that a little bit later. Yes. Oh, boy. That's a whole other conversation.
I blame them for this turducken predicament we're all in.
You may not be wrong, but I'm not going to bring it up again because I don't know. I don't need that. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the C segment, maybe. But for now, as we mentioned, this is going to be another great crop of listener stories on this show. Some kind of touching, some creepy as hell. Mm-hmm. And through it all, we're just going to do what we can to maintain a facade of normality, or at least as normal as this show ever gets.
I was going to say, as normal as we get.
Yeah, we've already covered Pornhub.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and so we're off to a good start. Things
yeah.
are
oh my gosh, like, yeah. This is like yep. every day.
Yes. So, coming up after the break, Listener Stories, Volume 19.
Wow.
And I get that a lot.
From 19-year-olds?
No. Welcome back. As we said before the break, this episode is all listener stories. This is our 19th volume of listener stories.
That's amazing. Our listeners are the best.
They really are. Our listeners, you guys rock. Before we get there, though, there is something I wanted to address that we briefly brought up in the opening segment as well.
I'm scared.
Yes. We're going to be very circumspect about this. That is the fallout from episode 80. May the Dead Rise Up to Meet You, The Haunting of Ireland. And what fallout it was.
It was just a bad decision all around. And what confused me was, and I will confess this now, I did not read the stories ahead of time. And you had told me a long time ago, when we did our one and only episode about them.
Yes, episode 27 for reference.
Tiny inhabitants of the Emerald Isle and other places, that we were never, ever, because of what we went through recording that episode, we were never going to talk about them again. And yet, there we are, invoking them constantly. So, I don't know what was happening there in your brain.
I forgot. Well, not I forgot. For reference, if you're new to the show, or if you're, you know, a recent-ish listener and you haven't listened to the back catalog, episode 27 was about Irish folklore. And again, I won't be more specific than that for reasons that if you go back and listen, you'll understand. We had a lot of technical problems during that episode.
Yeah.
The software did things it has never done before and did not do after until, and I shit you not, editing episode 80, The Haunting of Ireland.
And getting through The Haunting of Ireland was one of our toughest shows to record in probably 20 episodes, 30 episodes.
Oh,
40
yeah.
40 episodes.
It was ridiculous because I loved the stories. I felt the stories were well written.
They were. Yeah. No, they were
the
great.
Cabin Fever episode we recorded before that. We were on fire.
Yeah.
And then we got, and even the A segment of that show, we were on fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we got to the stories and it was like running into a brick wall.
100%. Yeah.
And our energy plummeted. We were stumbling. There were problems with the audio. There were problems with the mics.
Your voice.
And my voice, yeah, my voice was hooped.
Yep.
It fried. It got better towards the end. And I think I may have solved that. I think it may be like a, you know, there is a reason for that, but there's no reason for it to have started.
No.
Then.
No.
So we had all that happen. And then when it came time to record, or sorry, to edit, there was, again, another series of mistakes. And so at some point in the episode, I said, I referred to the luck of the Irish. And Rachel, who is a friend of the show, sent me a message and said, you know, that's ironic, right? That it's the Irish aren't, it's because everything goes wrong for them. And we very much then, in that case, had the luck of the Irish on that
we
episode.
We truly did. We were entrenched in Irish luck.
We up to our necks while someone threw shovelfuls of Irish luck at us. Luke likes to joke, he's having a great laugh about this, that next year he'll sort of, I'll forget and we'll do this again. But no, I will not. We will never do another episode.
Never forget.
Hashtag never forget. We'll never do another episode on
them.
Never again will we cover that particular topic.
No. Nope.
Because that is hassle, sir. We do not need. All right. So with that out of the way, and
never to be spoken of again.
Never to be spoken of again. Oh, I do have one more spooky thing. And we talked about this on the Cabin Fever episode. I recently joined or was sort of sucked into this Facebook group, which deals with growing up in Revelstoke. Of course, the hometown.
Right, my
hometown and the setting for my book, A Strange Little Place, available.
Oh my God, stop Five it. No one has old. Any money anymore. Just stop it.
But in case you do, I can't send you autographed copies right now. That's not happening. But you can still get it in Kindle form on Amazon.
Anyways.
There's a house in Revelstoke called Holton House, which is considered to be the most haunted house in Revelstoke. It's the one everyone knows about. And a lot of the stories about Holton House are not factual. They're just bullshit. But in my book, I managed to find people going back as far as 1953 who have first-person stories of strange things happening. And they all largely line up with one another.
Right.
So you'll have decades worth of people talking about something going on the stairs. Something's watching me, something pushing me on the stairs. The other element of Holton House seems to be that it has a powerful effect on the dreams of people who spend time there or just on certain people. And in my book, I talk about a gentleman who, when he was a student in, I think, the early 60s, he used to have to walk past Holton House on the way to school.
Right.
And he would have frequent dreams about there being a garage on, shall we say, on the far side of the house, on the right side of the house, if you're looking at it. That garage in his dreams is full of headless bodies.
Not good.
And nope, this is a good sign that it's time to leave the neighborhood. So there's that. But then in the dream, a man comes out of the house and he is coming for the boy.
Uh-oh.
So that's creepy. And then I interviewed a woman who also dreamed about there being bodies buried on the same side of the house. No garage full of headless bodies, but this idea of dead people on that side of the house.
How weird is that?
It's bizarre. Yeah, there is no crossover here. You know, they had not discussed this between each other, so far as I know. And there is no record of there being anything interred on the property. Then, a couple days ago, I posted a picture of Holton House from 1897 in this Revelstoke Facebook group, just because it's a cool piece of history. You know, it's the photo is from the Provincial Archives, so not everyone has seen it. And people loved it. You know, it was very popular. But what was fascinating is I was contacted by a woman. She's an attorney, and she's a very, very successful attorney, so I have to be very careful about how I word this. But she said, you probably don't know this, but when I was a little girl, I used to have to walk past there on my way to school, and I always used to have nightmares about a man coming out of the house to get me. And she has no connection to these other two people and has not lived in Revelstoke for probably the better part of 50 years.
Wow.
So, again, could mean nothing at all. But I just love these meaningful coincidences that pop up, especially around Revelstoke, you know, because, and I won't get into it here, but I've talked on various interviews about how there is this fascinating commonality in dream geography to Revelstoke.
Right.
Different people dream about the same places, but those places don't actually exist.
It's interesting, eh?
Yeah.
There's something weird going on there.
Yeah, and not just me. So
no, that's why you left.
Yeah, exactly. I was too weird for Revelstoke. All right. Let's get to the stories.
Our first story is from Jason. I've always been a little on the sensitive side of things and know my family has also. However, being raised Jehovah's Witness, we were unable to speak about it. I've long gotten over those issues. However, the thing that I had wasn't fun when I was a child. I would have horrible nightmares every night and have to be shaken awake by my mother. But when I woke up, they were still there. She told me I would then pass out or faint after screaming and pointing. I remember my father not letting me watch TV or listen to radio because that's where I must be getting those ideas from. Seeing non-people continued through my life. Seeing dark ladies in San Francisco at my friend's old Victorian, a little boy at a job in Oakland when working in an old warehouse, and on and on. When I was younger, I'd be able to see them while I was looking directly at them. Now it seems I can only see them out of the corner of my eye. Also, when I would talk about these things to my friends, I would get goosebumps. All the hair would raise on my body and tears would come to my eyes. That doesn't happen anymore. Almost like I've numbed myself. Have you heard of that happening? Anyway, I wanted to tell you a fun little innocent spooky story that happened the other day in time for Halloween. My husband and I went to see a friend who was bartending at the Stanwood Hotel and Saloon in Stanwood, Washington. It was a nice afternoon and we thought we would have a beer, say hi, and enjoy the day. It was very slow and it was just the two of us with the bartender Arlene, just shooting the shit when Steve, my husband, went to use the restroom. A couple of minutes later, Arlene and myself saw Steve walk out of the restroom, open the side door, and walk out. We both thought that was odd, so we went over to see what he was doing and no one was there. Then Steve came up behind us and asked us what we were doing. We both jumped to high heaven. When we talked to Arlene about it more, she was telling us that things like that happen all the time. Mop buckets being flipped over, bartender's hair being pulled, and so on.
So thank you for this story, Jason. I got to say, though, this woman was way too nonchalant about doppelganger, just wandering around.
Maybe she's just used to it. Like, ah, yeah, that's a thing.
There just goes my murderous twin. Look at him. Good guy. Anyways, he's strangling someone. That's fun.
That's fun.
I don't even know where Stanwood, Washington is.
I don't either, actually.
Jason, we are incapable of using Google. Please inform us where Stanwood, Washington is. But no, that's fascinating. And the part about him still seeing the things after he wakes up,
mm-hmm.
We had another story from a listener who had that same thing. They woke up and there were hands reaching out at them.
Yeah.
And so I just can't imagine that sort of the hell of finally escaping a nightmare. Only to have it. Okay, so I'm living in that. Fine. Yeah, I get it.
Exactly. But yeah.
There's no hands reaching out at the wall.
No, not yet.
At least.
When he said about these things happening and then becoming numb to them.
Oh, yeah. I wonder what you thought about
that. Yeah, I can see that. I think it's more you just sort of get more used to it and you learn to shield yourself better without even really knowing it. Like I've certainly been able to do that. And I don't even know that it was a conscious thing. It was just what you do. You know, like if your foot is hurt, you automatically favor your other foot. You don't really think about it. You just do it. You just adapt.
Right.
I think it's the same thing. If you have a sore finger, you just learn to use your other hand. And I think if you're very sensitive to things and it affects you that profoundly, you just learn to compensate for it. And I think that's what's happened.
This story comes from Jessica. Hey, guys. I work as a home care physio, traveling from one house to the next, providing physio to those in need. Jessica, you're doing the Lord's work. I had been seeing this one elderly lady for several weeks, and all had been going well. Then one rainy fall day, we were standing at her kitchen counter doing her standing exercises. Behind us, at a diagonal, was a hallway with bedrooms. I started feeling watched and seeing something moving from the corner of my eye. I started turning to look, and saw that the bedroom door that had been closed was now open. She lives alone and has no pets. I mentioned nothing and kept up with her treatment, noticing more movement again from the corner of my eye. The door was now closed. I told my patient that her door kept opening and closing, and she looked right at me. My husband always told me, she said, he'd die in the night and be back in the morning. I flew out of that house so fast. So thank you for that story, Jessica. That sounds singularly terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about that response, just this nonchalant, he said he'd be back in the morning. Like, unless you're married to Jesus, that's no good.
No, exactly. And even he took 3 days.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I saw this great gag, you know, with all these things going on with Turducken. The Vatican has canceled the big Easter Mass.
Right.
And someone commented on the internet and said, how bad does it have to be that the Pope says, nope, Jesus just stays dead this year.
That's awesome.
So thank you again for that story, Jessica.
Absolutely.
And I mean, you're doing the Lord's work. I would be crippled if not for physiotherapy. So you guys are incredible. Thank you. And to all those physiotherapists out there.
Mm-hmm.
Genuinely. Physiotherapy has enabled me to be the walking talking hot mess I am now. So thanks, I guess.
Yeah, I'm super thankful.
and I'm a pain-free hot mess, physically.
Mentally, yeah. You're tortured, but physically.
Yeah, well, you can't have everything.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabay. Anabay is the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Our next story is from Flick. I'm a dog walker, and on Friday, I had the strangest experience and just had to tell you about it. I was walking 6 dogs of various sizes, age, and breeds around 1 p.m. in Dulwich Park, South London. Dulwich is a beautiful area of large period properties, quaint cottages, and tasteful conversions, but it retains a village feel. The park contains manicured hedges and lawns surrounding a picturesque lake. There's often filming and photo shoots taking place in and around the area, so I wasn't surprised to see 2 young women in 1940s outfits walking towards me. I figured they were probably part of a film set. They were arm in arm, giggling. One was dressed in a 2-piece skirt suit with dainty little shoes and her hair rolled up and pinned at the sides. The other was dressed as a land girl in green overalls, boots, and a scarf knotted over her hair. They seemed oblivious to me, but were both looking and smiling at the herd of dogs and their leads that I was wrestling. When they were almost parallel with me, I said hello, and they both visibly flinched, and their gaze moved from the dogs to me. I was taken aback. They were absolutely beautiful. Their faces perfectly made up, flawless, like a doll's face. Their skin was practically luminescent. I thought to myself, oh, they're definitely models or film stars. They said hello and admired the dogs, and I said how amazing they looked in their 1940s wartime wear and asked if they were in a film or attending a convention or something. The one dressed as a land girl looked at me bemused and said, oh no, dearie, we're going to tea whilst we are able. I thought it was weird they were still in character, but nodded and smiled and told them to have a lovely afternoon. After that, I became aware that all 6 dogs were absolutely silent and unmoving. The 2 huskies were lying down with their heads on their paws. The British Bulldog and Sharpei were standing looking in the direction the women had walked. And the Dachshund and Fox Terrier were standing either side of me, their hackles up but not making a sound. The women were only 20 feet away, so I turned to shout after them that it had a calming effect on the dogs, but as I watched, not a single other person took a blind bit of notice of them. I stood there thinking how bizarre that was, then realized they were walking on air. Their feet maybe 6 inches above the ground. I was gobsmacked, and my mind raced over the whole incident, how they startled when I said hello, the way they admired the dogs but didn't touch them, the fact that the dogs usually mob anyone who shows them attention, how immaculate they looked despite the wind and rain. Even their accents sounded out of time, but I never got a strange sensation or feeling in my stomach, nothing. They looked real and interacted with me. Either I hallucinated the whole incident, or I met 2 wartime ladies. Why me?
That is fascinating. Thank you so much for that story, Flick.
Oh, it's a great story.
And it's always such a crapshoot because, you know, again, is it... Well, I guess if they're 6 inches above the ground, then they're not cosplayers.
No, that's pretty weird.
It's not a convention. Because 6 inches is a lot.
Yeah.
Like, that's huge. That's more than you need, really.
Oh, God. Just stop.
You have to measure from this, like...
No. Enough. They were floating. Let's leave it at that.
They were floating, yes. But, yeah, that's fascinating. I know she talks about how they, when she first thought they were people, they were still in character, and that seemed weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, I hate period impersonators.
Right.
Who still are, like, who have to maintain character. As far as I'm concerned, it's like being stuck in Westworld after the robots have turned.
You know, most of those provincial kind of places are. There's one in Manitoba.
called Lower Fort Garry. It's the same thing. And it can actually be kind of fun. Like, I remember going to Lower Fort Garry and they make you watch a video before you go into the actual fort. And one of the things was the governor built Lower Fort Garry to keep his wife there so he could have his girlfriend at Upper Fort Garry.
Oh, that's smart.
Right? So when I went into the shop, the man's there and he's like, oh, have you come to trade some beaver pelts? Good sir. You know, that kind of garbage. And because I find it annoying too. And I'm like, I'm just going to lean into this. And I'm like, so what did you hear about the governor's fancy woman? And this guy was awesome. He like leaned on the counter and he goes, well. So I appreciated that. But when they're just these flat kind of Westworld after the robots turned.
No, I don't. I just have a hard time engaging with it. It freaks me out somehow. And I know a guy who does it. You know, it turns out Anthony and I have a friend in common who does this kind of stuff. It just seems unnatural somehow.
This is unnatural. We're sitting in separate rooms talking into microphones that people are somehow going to hear. I mean, you know, what's natural?
Okay, Granddad. This story comes from Kim. When I was younger, my cousin and I were inseparable. We spent every single day together, alternating between staying at each other's houses. We were very open children and very sensitive to energies. We experienced paranormal events at both of our houses constantly. I believe the entities followed us. However, one event stands out, and that I would like to tell you about. When I was about 10 years old, I was staying at my cousin's house. Her room was on the second floor and her bed was on the floor right in line with the door, so you could see the top of the stairs. Many nights you could hear what is best described as residual footsteps, starting at the bottom of the stairs and going slowly to the top. Then, instead of going back down the stairs, the noise would start at the bottom of the staircase again, and this would go on for most of the night. One night I was awoken to this familiar sound, but this time it was a bit different. On this occasion, the noise slowly got to the top of the stairs, and I saw an entity standing there, staring at me. But this wasn't a shadow person, which we also would see from time to time darting around our houses. This being was made of fire. However, I didn't see any smoke, and he was just standing there. It was clearly a man, but made of fire, and I can't even say that the fire was glowing and emitting much light, just a small amount. I remember being terrified and not being able to scream or even really move. Like many of your other listeners experiencing terrifying events, I must have just gone back to sleep. The next thing I can remember, it's been like 25 years, is waking up in the morning. It must have been a dream. I told my cousin the next morning, and to my surprise, she had had exactly the same dream. Fast forward to about a week ago. I started watching a random documentary on shadow people. About 45 minutes in, it starts talking about an entity that is made of smokeless fire, a djinn. I felt anxiety and panic immediately overtake me. It was as if that entity had become aware I knew what it was and focused in on me, watching me. That night, I was laying in bed sleeping and was woken up from pressure on my chest. I sleep with an eye mask on as we have a street light outside our window. However, I don't think I could have opened my eyes if I wanted to. I was frozen and paralyzed in place. It was getting heavier and heavier. I tried saying, no, get off, but I could only think it as I was not able to speak. After about a minute, which seemed like an eternity, the pressure eased. The pressure eased. I was not entirely sure I didn't just whip myself up into a panic and imagine it, but either way, the next day I saged the entire house and haven't had a problem since. So thank you for that story, Kim. And that's fascinating. That is, I think, the first time I've heard a story about something you would specifically call a djinn that actually bears some kind of resemblance to the whole smokeless fire idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding.
Because I, you know, as she mentioned, watching that documentary on shadow people, a lot of people think that shadow people are, you know, are djinn somehow. You know, and they use a smokeless fire thing, but I mean, shadow people look like smoke, not fire.
Yeah.
I would love to know if anyone else has had a similar experience, this idea of seeing someone on fire, but the fire that doesn't emit much light either, which is interesting.
Yeah, I've never heard of that, actually. I mean, shadow people, yes. But that whole fire thing, no, that's a new one on me.
Something else that it reminded me of was a long time ago when I was researching the book, I found a story from Radium, which is in Eastern BC, if you don't know the area. Mm-hmm,
Radium Hot Springs, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And this guy was driving along the road, I want to say about 10:30 at night, and he realized he was being paced, or he was pacing something, that looked to be about, it was roughly the size of the moon in the sky, but it was below the treetops. It was below the mountaintop. And it was bright like the moon, but it cast no light and no shadow.
Wow, that's not cool.
No, and he was a it was an interesting conversation, because this is about 7 years ago. I talked to this guy, and he had never experienced anything like this before in his life. Has never since. Was genuinely sort of concerned that maybe something was going wrong in his head.
Right.
But he said he pulled the car over and he watched this thing just continue down the valley. And he said it was passing by trees, over trees, and never once, despite how bright it was, did it ever cast a shadow.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah.
So all these little things, it just remind us that the world's a hell of a lot more complicated than we thought it was.
A lot more interesting, too.
So thank you again for that story, Kim.
Our next story is from Nadia. I would like to point out that I'm not completely at peace with some of the things that I've experienced, but I'm thinking the more I share, the more accepting I might become. I've got loads of stories, as I've always been aware of the other side, even as a little child. However, I'll just share the one for now. Please, if you want to share it, feel free to rewrite so the story stays the same, but it makes more sense for others. The Black Dog. I've never seen the Black Dog in real life. However, I've dreamt about him several times, and every time it's meant death. In the dream, I'm on an embankment, with water on one side, and a field, and a very dark forest on the other. It's nighttime, and the only light there is the kind of light you get with a full moon. I'm chasing a large black shaggy dog along this embankment. It definitely doesn't want me chasing or following it. Periodically, it turns around, growling and snapping at me, with really big, sharp teeth. All I know is, I must catch it. I have no choice. I'm out of breath, shaking, but I keep chasing it, and just as I'm about to catch it, I awake with a jolt. And I just know someone I know has died. I never know who. I just know it's someone I know. It's the most intense fear and dread you can imagine. The first few times, I called around to check up on people. I don't do this anymore, as it feels inappropriate to me. Sometimes knowing before the closest family. Also, people think it's strange. So now, whenever I have that dream, I just wait for the inevitable phone call. I know it sounds like I'm mad, and sometimes it can feel like that too. Have you ever heard anything like this?
So first off, thanks for sharing that, Nadia. I know you came to us sort of again via Rachel. I have not heard specifically of dreams about the black dog, but I know that in black dog lore, it's not uncommon that it's seen as like a harbinger or a kind of like the banshee, like it's seen before a loss.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's definitely not, not unusual. Have you ever experienced anything like this?
I've never experienced anything like that. I don't know that that's knowledge I would want.
I'm sort of the same mind. I don't think it's like being the Cassandra, you know, like you know, yeah. But you're powerless to change.
Exactly. And why would you want to know that?
Yeah. I know that someone pretty close to me has it's becoming increasingly regular or increasingly common, dreams about people in their life who are going through difficult times.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll wake up and say, I had a dream about so-and-so, and you know, I'll hear about it later. And, you know, she'll get in touch with this person. And I think she tries not to mention, much like Nadia, you know, it's because it's hard to say, hey, I had a dream about you.
I've had that. I get that on a pretty regular basis. And I just check in with people. I don't even tell them most of the time I've had a dream. I'm like, hey, you know, it crossed my mind. How are you doing? And that's it. I just leave it at that.
Okay, but you have had a dream about people in distress. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, or going through hard times. And they're like, oh, it's weird you would call me. You know, this week I've been going through this or this health crisis or relationship crisis or whatever. So, yeah. And you know what? Maybe that's me planting that in their heads. Yeah. Or maybe
call
that is
Ian.
Yeah, or maybe that is me picking up something, right? I don't know.
I notice you've never called me to see how I'm doing.
No. It's just better that I don't.
Yeah, that's right. Call me when you're not miserable.
I'm not a magician.
And with a push of this button, I will make you disappear. Thank you again, Nadia. You also mentioned having more stories. When you are comfortable enough to share them, we would love to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
This story comes from Jenny. I thought I would tell you about an experience I had back in my late teens / early 20s. I grew up in the foothills of western North Carolina, about halfway between Charlotte and Nashville. It was very rural. Imagine driving about 30 minutes one way to get to a store bigger than a gas station. That's how rural my hometown was. Anyway, one night around 9:30 or 10, a friend of mine, Dale, and I went to a very small Presbyterian church that I swear could fit into my one-bedroom apartment. Dale and I were into the paranormal, ghost hunting and the like. He had heard that there was something that lived in the churchyard, primarily in the graveyard. We pulled up and parked facing the church with a road to our left and the graveyard to our right. There was a streetlight in the back of the church that illuminated the graveyard fairly well. The nearest neighbors were a couple miles in either direction on the other side of the road. After we'd been sitting there for a few minutes, I told Dale I thought there was something walking among the graves, although neither of us could see anything. He had brought along a disposable camera and took a few pictures from inside the car through the passenger side, my side, window. Over the course of the next half hour maybe, I'm not sure how long we were there, we repeated this process. Each time, though, it felt like the something was moving across the churchyard and parking lot towards my side of the car. Eventually, I told Dale it felt like it was standing right next to my door looking in on us. There were no shadows, no shapes, no nothing. Dale took more pictures and we continued talking. At the next pause in our conversation, it felt like it was on top of the car. Next thing I know, it seemed like the something was walking down the front windshield, across the hood of the car, and was gone. Dale continued to take pictures and we left shortly thereafter. Again, there were no shadows, no animals we recognized, not even a breeze. The following week, Dale brought the pictures to show me what had developed. Of all the pictures he took, only two showed anything, and they were the last two. These were taken when I was describing whatever it was walking down the windshield, over the hood, and off the car. One picture showed a white fog or mist spot on the windshield, about the size and shape of a medium-sized dog's paw. The other showed a similar spot near the middle of the windshield, along with another mist-like streak near the base of the windshield, as if a dog or something similar was walking down the windshield, and one paw slipped. So that's, again, really, really interesting. Thank you, Jenny, because that kind of connects back to our previous story. It's said in the black dog lore that they guard churchyards.
Right.
So it's fascinating that they saw, you know, or it, what, you know, some kind of animal that walked up the car from the graveyard.
Well, yeah. I mean, the black dog stories are much more popular in England, of course, where they seem to have a lot more smaller graveyards, burial grounds near churches. But no, that's really neat.
I think you and I have very different definitions of what constitutes neat, but yes.
I just think it's interesting that it kind of crossed cultural lines, so to speak. Our next story is from Mandy. I was 11 years old in 1977 when my parents bought their first house, which was totally unmodernized with original fireplaces, single glazed windows, and no indoor plumbing. My dad took me along with him to the new house prior to us moving in, and I remember feeling something, but paid it no mind as I didn't really understand what it was I felt. It wasn't until the first night after the whole family had moved in that I experienced something. I'd fallen asleep in the new bedroom I shared with my little sister, and dreamed of two people arguing, an aggressive male and a timid-sounding woman, and then I woke up with a high fever. As the years went by, I always felt like I was not alone. Like I was being watched. Then things slowly started to escalate, starting small, like hearing a piano playing one note over and over and over. One memorable experience happened on Christmas night. Everyone had gone to bed and I was asleep. When my sister woke me up, she whispered loudly, "I can hear people downstairs having a party in the kitchen." Our bedroom was directly above the kitchen, so I sat up and listened, and sure enough, she was definitely not hearing things. To my utter astonishment, I could hear people talking and laughing. I could also hear the drawers opening and closing, rattling all the cutlery and cupboard doors opening and banging closed. I could hear our back door squeaking open, and it sounded like lots of people in the kitchen having fun. After a while, we plucked up the courage to run down the landing to our parents' room and woke them up. They would not have any of it and told us to go back to bed as it's probably the neighbors we could hear. We went back to bed, but the noise below us continued. My sister, who was much braver than I, decided it was time to go investigate. We crept halfway down the stairs and leaned over the banister. Nobody was in the kitchen, and the light was off. The next morning, we asked our neighbors if they'd had company over around that time, and they said they had not, and in fact were already in bed at that time. That experience confirmed to me and my sister that we are not the only family that live in that house.
Another memorable experience, my family and I were in the living room watching TV together, sometime around 1981 or 82. My mom asked me to pop upstairs to her bedroom to retrieve something for her. As I was about to descend the stairs on my way back, I heard a loud boo in my ear. I took the rest of the stairs two at a time and burst into the living room, expecting to find one of my siblings had pranked me. Everyone was present and accounted for. Finally, in 2002, I was grown up with two children who insisted I go to see a medium because they wanted me to be able to contact my deceased dad. As there was a psychic fair in town, we went along, and I saw a medium who immediately told me she had a message. Expecting the message to be from my deceased father or grandfather, you can imagine my surprise when she said it was from a mother and daughter who wanted to apologize for playing pranks on me in my childhood home. So there you go.
Well, that's pretty great.
That was pretty great. I love that end.
I mean, it's terrifying. And you know, I don't think I would be as appreciative of their sense of humor if I had someone shouting boo in my ear.
No.
In my house. But still, I love that, you know, they actually came back and said, hey, sorry.
Yeah, it's pretty great, actually.
Just imagine ghosts sitting around looking at each other. You know, I feel like we took it too far, Terry.
I feel like she just wasn't ready.
it was funny, and then we took it over the line. How do we apologize? Do we put it on the mirror in blood? No, it's probably not a good idea. Let's influence her to go to a psychic fair. We can apologize.
I love that, too, that it was the stereotypical boo.
Yeah, exactly. Just go with the classics.
Go with the classics, yeah. Do we have some chains we can rattle? Or
you know, got to requisition them from Ghost HQ. That's going to take weeks.
Like a Beetlejuice, yeah.
Yeah, just go with boo. You can't go wrong with boo.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for that story, Mandy.
This story comes from Chelsea. I have just recently become a fan of your podcast and thought I'd share my first experience of the supernatural. My sixth sense came about when my parents bought their first home. They instantly realized the previous owners were Satanists, or at least were into some freaky stuff, because throughout the house they found pentagrams drawn on the floors, as well as dead rats and cats in the basement. Folks, don't sacrifice your animals.
I'm about to have a dead cat in my basement.
Well, that's a special occasion.
Yeah.
He's been interrupting recording of our Oh So Important podcast. This is the downside of not having the studio. Either way, my parents didn't care because they planned on tearing the house down and rebuilding, and so they did. After they rebuilt the house is when things started to get weird. My sister Pearl and I shared a room for a while where we could see things, almost like shadows, move in the dark. We would wake from a deep sleep to see our bedroom door open and a man with what looked like a top hat standing in the doorway. When we would tell our parents, they would almost shrug it off, like we were still dreaming or telling stories. Then my grandma stopped babysitting because she said one night when we were fast asleep, upstairs she would hear footsteps. It sounded like little kids playing and running around. She went up to find that we were all still in bed and asleep. My mom finally came around to believing us when she saw her bedroom door kicked open and slammed back shut one night, along with numerous accounts of seeing pictures fly off the walls, lights turning on, noises from children playing while us kids were in school or asleep. Man, how much more do you need?
Yeah, really, eh?
Satan himself has got to come down and do a puppet show for you. The worst account for me was when I was the only child home one weekend and asked to sleep on my parents' bedroom floor. At the time, they were remodeling their bedroom and had moved all their stuff to the sitting room upstairs. They said yes, so I grabbed my pillow and blankets and laid down on the ground near the door. Only seconds had gone by before I felt the hairs on my neck stand up. Something was there, but I was too scared to open my eyes. Finally, I worked up the courage and saw nothing at first, but as I looked down the dark hallway that led to my room, I saw movement. I looked harder. Then I saw him. A tall man, so tall that almost looked like he had to duck under the doorway. He was wearing what looked like a long black trench coat and a top hat. He walked so slowly towards me, I was paralyzed. He got closer, and as he did, he smiled at me. That smile shook me to my core. I finally was able to jump up and run downstairs to my parents. To this day, I still see the man. My grandma actually talked me into getting blessed a few years ago. By this time, I had moved out of that house into a tiny one-bedroom apartment. I woke up at exactly 3 a.m. and was thirsty as hell. Normally, I'd keep the lamp on in my living room, but for some reason, it was off. I didn't think anything of it, until I looked over and on my couch sat this tall man, and even though the room was dark, he was darker than the dark. if that makes sense. I stood there at first thinking it was my eyes adjusting until I saw his smile. Again, I was paralyzed. Then he stood up. The nearest light, the lamp that's normally on, was beside him. There was not a damn chance I was going near that. I had to run through my kitchen and flick the light on. And when I did, he was gone. It's like he knows he scares me, and that's why he smiles. He gets a sinister kind of joy out of it. Well, that's a horrifying thought.
Well, it makes sense, though, doesn't it?
I mean, it certainly fits with what we've heard about other shadow people encounters.
Yeah.
There does seem to be sort of a Monsters Incorporated-esque.
Yes.
scares for fun subplot. Well, thanks for sharing that with us, Chelsea. And yeah. I hope that that's the last you have to deal with that son of a bitch.
Our last story tonight comes from Lex.
And just for a little bit of background information and a bit of a content warning, and we don't normally do those, but this story deals heavily with domestic abuse, so now you know. You can be turn it off and go to the C segment or just be prepared for it. And the other thing is that this is a little bit longer, so we're going to take turns reading it, but we felt that there was no way to condense it without sacrificing the story. So away we go. A bit of obligatory context to start. It's not that I don't believe in ghosts, but I am a highly analytical person. I have degrees in epidemiological history and an advanced degree in epidemiology. As a result, I am extremely skeptical of all arguments, even those supported by data or statistics. I also believe there are many things humans will never understand about our minds and bodies, and supernatural experiences fit squarely in this category.
Perhaps as a result, I only have a few direct experiences with the supernatural. In the interest of full disclosure, I do regularly experience what I call space memories. I'm extremely sensitive to physical spaces, the geographies of buildings, how homes feel, or places that are known historical sites. Imagine walking on wet ground, and any time you take a step, your footprint fills with water. Except the water is memories of past events, or people, seeping into your skin as long as you're on that land. I've had my most vivid experiences in the killing fields of Cambodia or Valley Forge in Pennsylvania, but more on that on a later date.
Another pertinent point, I'm not at all a touchy person and have been this way since I was a child. My childhood best friend once called me cold, hard, and shiny, and I took it as a compliment. All of that to say, when I had my first ever experience with what I now believe to be a ghost, I had an extremely strong reaction.
I was at my best friend's house, which she then shared with her now ex-shitbag, I mean ex-boyfriend. We'd spent the day visiting our favorite local spots around Austin where I lived at the time, and had returned to her place after an early dinner. We'd picked up a couple bottles of wine and were sipping a glass or two on her back patio, laughing and chatting as we often do. The day was unusually warm, even for Austin, but the temperature started to drop as it grew dark. We decided to build a fire with some scrap wood the shitbag, her ex, had left over from building a fence. I'm not sure if this matters, but it also happened to be the day after the winter solstice, and the wood we were burning was cedar. Now, the solstice I understand, but I have a sneaking suspicion that cedar may have some significance as well. I'm still refusing to engage with that.
Our conversation turned to my friend's house, which the shitbag was renting. My friend had moved in with him 2 months prior and was telling me how much she loved the house, though she suspected it may be haunted. She cited doors that would lock or unlock on their own, and that the shitbag had seen what she could only guess was an apparition. And I'm just going to say I really love her continuing to run with shitbag.
Oh, absolutely.
Apparently, he had been in the living room when he heard a noise and looked down the hall, which led to the back of the house, and their bedroom door. He claimed that a blonde woman dressed in white, who he thought was my friend, exited their bedroom and crossed the hallway, presumably into the study or spare bedroom, which were around a corner. He tried to call out to her, but she didn't answer. He then got up and followed her to ask if she was okay, only to find that all the other rooms were empty, and my friend was sleeping soundly in their bed.
None of this seemed off to me. I knew that my friend had also thought her old house was haunted, and the shitbag was the only person who had actually seen the ghost there. It terrified him one night by appearing as he walked down from the kitchen back to my friend's bedroom after getting a drink of water. It should be noted that the shitbag is a U.S. Army veteran and a complete skeptic. He still insisted he doesn't believe in ghosts, doesn't care about ghosts. Despite these visual confirmations, stubbornness is just one of his more irritating traits.
But as my friend and I continued talking, things got weird. I suddenly found myself telling my friend that it wasn't the house that was haunted, it was her. I somehow knew that she had picked up a ghost while studying abroad in France. The more we talked, the more I knew. my friend was fascinated and asked more and more questions. It's weird looking back on it now, but she didn't question my knowledge at all. She believed everything I said.
Then out of nowhere, I felt something invisible just descend on me. I felt it from the top of my head to the tips of my fingertips and all the way down to my toes, like something had gently floated into me through my skin. Answers came, clearer and faster, and suddenly I knew even more details about the ghost. Her name was Giselle D. I never found out what the D meant. She died when she was a young woman of a prolonged illness. She died in bed with a white nightgown on, which explains why the ship bag had seen a woman in white. Because of her illness, she looked old, dark circles under her eyes and sagging, sallow skin, but she insisted that she was not old. Her hair was long and very light, either white or light blonde. My friend also has light blonde hair. Her light, or her aura, I guess, was a bright, warm yellow.
She told me to tell my friend that she did not like her boyfriend and felt the need to protect her from him. She said she had shown herself to him to fuck with him and played with the locks on the doors to mess with him specifically. Now, I had been drinking, but I wasn't so drunk that any of this felt normal. The longer it went on, and especially after I felt that physical sensation, I started to react very strongly. The part of my mind that this entity wasn't occupying started to panic. Why was this happening to me? What the hell was it that touched me, and why had it touched me? Why did I know all this about a ghost?
In the midst of the conversation, I started to cry and shake violently, and between messages from the ghost, I would ask, almost yelling, "What the hell is going on? Why is this happening to me?" Now, I'm a native Texan. I'm not a crier. Even my husband, who's known me for over 15 years, can count on one hand the number of times he's seen me cry. My friend had never seen me cry, and it was this that made her realize that something was really wrong. She took me inside and wrapped me in a blanket, but I couldn't calm down and continued shaking.
Giselle, meanwhile, was nonplussed. She thought I was overreacting and insisted that she meant no harm. I can still feel what I thought was her very French reaction, telling me airily to calm down. Yep, she's French. She insisted she was almost done, but that she needed to get a message to my friend. To be fair, I laugh about her reaction now and never did explicitly tell her to leave. So I cooperated, figuring that would make this all stop sooner. I told my friend, through tears, that Giselle had attached to her because she had identified with her spirit. My friend was a strong woman, and Giselle wanted her to know that she had been a strong woman too. She wanted my friend to acknowledge her more throughout the day. Her sentiment was that if she was doing all of this work to protect my friend from the shitbag, the least she could do in return was acknowledge her existence.
Around this time, my friend grew worried enough about me, I was still crying and shaking, that instinct took over. She took me to her meditation spot in her office and had me kneel with her on the ground. She told me that this was the cleanest, safest place in the house, and that I should tap into that energy so that this would pass. Giselle took the hint, and I soon felt her preparing to depart. She had me tell my friend that she specifically wanted her to recognize her in this spot every day when she meditated.
Just before she left, I asked her aloud, "Why me? Why were you messing with me?" She responded as if it were obvious, "Because you love her too." I simply whispered, "Thank you." And with that, Giselle was gone. I felt whatever it was that had descended upon me lift, and afterwards I felt tingling throughout my entire body. It felt for all the world as if I'd eaten a particularly strong and pleasant edible.
Once it was over and I stopped crying, I practically sprinted out of that house. Though I probably should not have been driving, I was so panicked that I had to leave. I hopped in my car and I went straight home. My husband, who was a skeptic at the time, had been taking a nap and was extremely grumpy when I woke him up to talk about ghosts. Frankly, he acted like an asshole about the whole thing and refused to believe me.
I had been on the fence about having a friend of a friend come to a house cleansing, but after this, I had someone come by less than a week later. Strangely, my husband didn't push back as much as I thought he would, and I found out why later. The cleansing was lovely, as uneventful as a cleansing can be, and involved Palo Santo smudging and a really in-depth tarot reading with Loteria cards. See above, read Texas. For some reason, perhaps due to shame or fear, I didn't tell the cleanser what had happened, and because my tarot reading was clear and he did a cleansing of my body along with my house, I felt good enough to let sleeping dogs lie.
Now for my husband. It turns out that this experience turned him into a believer as well. He insists to this day that I brought something back with me. At the time, he was having some issues with his back and shoulder, and as a result, he wanted to sleep on his back. However, he snores like a lumberjack when he sleeps on his back, so he took to sleeping on the couch in our study so I could get some sleep. while he was sleeping in the study. He claims he was woken up every night around 3 a.m. to rhythmic knocking in one corner across from the couch. This corner was on the third story of our house, on an exterior wall which faced a parking lot. There were no trees or anything else that could knock on the wall from the outside. He insists that after the cleansing, the knocking stopped.
As for Giselle, she is still with my friend. She had her work cut out for her when the shitbag, always an abuser, inevitably turned violent. My friend told me that Giselle would often lock him out of the house when he had been drinking or when they were fighting, much to my friend's entertainment and delight. Finally, after an especially violent incident, my friend called the police, kicked the shitbag out of the house he was renting, got a protective order, and legally took over the lease to the house. He was arrested for domestic violence and had his work truck repossessed on the same day, and will soon have to face a criminal case for his violent and abusive actions. Well, good, and I hope that in the time since you have written this to us, the motherfucker has gone to jail. To this day, every time I go to my friend's house, I always greet Giselle as I walk over the threshold. Sometimes I can still sense her yellow aura in a corner or room when I visit.
Finally, I want to send a message to anyone out there who is experiencing domestic abuse or violence. It is never okay, and you are never alone. Reach out to your friends, your family, hell, even the guiding and protective spirits around you. There is always help. There is always hope.
Well, thank you so much for that, Lex. And it's been a while since we received that, and I hope you are still well. And again, I repeat my wish that that son of a bitch gets what he deserves. I know so often in cases of domestic violence, that does not happen. And so hopefully.
Excellent.
And it's so true. You know, you're never alone. You're never without hope. And I know sometimes it seems that way, and it doesn't matter what you're dealing with, but there is always some way out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you've worked in counseling. You've seen people firsthand in these kinds of situations.
Yeah.
And I've not been in that situation, but I've been in emotionally abusive situations, when I was very young or when I was a young man. And certainly I've known people who've gone through those things. So you're never alone. There's always hope. That's all you need to know. That is the important thing.
Amazing story. And thank you for that.
All right. Well, thank you so much to everyone who wrote in. If you have a story you want to share with us, ghostoryguys@gmail.com. There are other ways to get a hold of us. We'll talk about that in the next segment. But for stories, ghostoryguys@gmail.com is the primary way to do it. We're going to take a little break and we'll be right back with our patron shout outs and listener mail. Welcome back. Thanks to the rest of the team, Luke Greensmith, Anthony Germain, and Sarah Kent for your help on this and every episode. We couldn't do it without you. And I was saying in the first version of this that we could not record because of a technical error, I really feel like this year we're coming together as a team so much more than we have in years past. You know, we've worked well together, but at the same time, I feel like this year we're really kind of gelling, and it's very cool.
Even though Anthony moved.
I know, right? What a traitor. We see you, Germaine. We see you. But anyways, no, it's he's gone up north where he is happy. He is a strange man, but we love him all the same.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabay. Anabay is the only machine washable sofa inside and out where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right. Sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
And so, next up, we have our patron shoutouts. Of course, we'd like to thank all our patrons, but we'd especially like to thank our latest patrons. They are
Heidi Barrett,
Anna Maria Lance,
Meg Bracey,
Darla Luke,
Victoria Avery,
Wayfarer,
Jessica Linder,
Bree Tate,
Kirsten Beats,
Denise Hurley,
Sonder Blues.
Thank you so much for your support, guys. I can't tell you how much we appreciate it, especially right now. You know, it's things are probably going to tighten up a little bit here. So, and my work has gone to zero. I mean, I've been quarantined for 2 weeks anyways.
Yeah.
But even before that, the amount of available hours, the bottom dropped right out. I don't know why. So this is a huge help, not only for that, but to help keep the show going. Because the show is not cheap to run, actually. It's sort of, it's become a bit of a behemoth, but in a good way. It's a beautiful behemoth. And you help keep the tank filled
on this
beautiful behemoth. So thank you so much. If you want to join the team, head on over to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. That's patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. We have tiers at the $1, $5, $10, $20, and $50 levels. Our rewards include exclusive stickers designed by Canadian artist Wanda Fraser. We have our monthly Cabin Fever episodes, which is an opportunity for you to hear some of the stuff that doesn't fit into the main show anymore. It's me and Ian hanging out and sharing what we've been up to, the food we've been eating, the movies we've been watching, all that kinds of good stuff. And they're anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes long, generally. And this month, actually, we've released an additional one for patrons. So there's tons of audio content to listen to, which is good because one downside to the situation that we all find ourselves in right now is the mail is not really running as it should.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a very good chance it may stop running for a while. And so any physical rewards you accrue from joining us, we will ship. We just won't ship yet. Once everything is back up and running properly, then we will ship your stickers. And once my quarantine ends and I'm confirmed to not be infected, then I will start packaging up these rewards because everything is sort of right now in sealed containers. And once I know for sure I'm clear, which you know won't be much longer, I will go start packaging those up. They'll be all prepared for when things resume again. So physical rewards will take a little while longer, but stuff like the live show, the Cabin Fever episodes, the bonus material, if there's anything that's cut from an episode just for time, all that stuff you'll have access to right away. And we're talking probably tens of hours of bonus content at this point. So there's a lot of stuff to keep you going. There's also, of course, the monthly Luke Lore episode,
mm-hmm.
in which Luke does a deep dive into the folklore topic of his choosing. That is actually also now available as its own podcast. So patrons get that 30 days ahead of everyone else. But if you are not a patron and you want to hear Luke Lore, you can find everything wherever fine podcasts live, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts. It is out there. Make sure to check it out and let Luke know what you think. And one last thing we wanted to say is we know things are going to be tight for a lot of people in the days and months to come. The world's going through a pretty seismic shift right now. And we want you to know that if you do need to drop your patronage, you know, if you need that money,
yeah.
that is totally fine with us. Not, of course, that you need our permission or approval, but I know some people are aware that they worry that, you know, the show will think badly of them or whatever.
Or we'll come to their house at night looking for money.
With a bunny suit and a crowbar. And that would make sense to you if you were a patron. But don't worry about it at all. I know I've had a couple patrons reach out and let me know that, you know, they've had to cut back their support for a while, and that's mm-hmm. totally fine. We care about you guys. We want you to be safe. We want you to be secure. The patronage is great. We're going to be here till the sun burns out. So
exactly.
When you're back on your feet, you're ready to support us again, we'll still be here and we'll appreciate it even more than we mm-hmm. already do now. And we appreciate it a whole fucking lot now. So
yeah.
So anyways, just our last note of seriousness and touching on the horror that is the modern world. You can find all that and more at patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. Now, ordinarily, this would be the part of the show where we do listener mail, but owing to a technical glitch, we lost the list of names.
Sorry.
Of people. Yeah, well, it happens.
I did respond to all of them.
Yes, which is the important
thing. Good, yeah.
So thank you to everyone who reached out. We love hearing from you, your comments, your questions, your gentle criticisms. And if you want to get in touch, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com is probably the primary way to do it. If you have stories, that's the primary place to send them. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ghoststoryguys, Twitter at twitter.com/ghoststoryguys, and Instagram as TheGhostStoryGuys. And if you have a story to share, there is another way to get it to us. And that is, of course, the ghost line. There's something strange in your neighborhood. We're gonna call ghost line. Call 1-888-588-6920. Huge thank you to our listener, Amber Pease, for that jingle. That is amazing. And if you have a ghost story, guys, ghost line jingle that you want to share, send it to us. ghostoryguys@gmail.com.
There you go.
If you want to reach the ghost line, the number is 1-888-588-6920. You can leave your story there as a single or series of voicemails. If you'd like to text us, you can text us at 925-553-4789. The 1-888 number is toll-free within North America. The text line, 925-553-4789, that is an American number. So if you're texting from outside the U.S., there may be a long-distance fee. It depends on your carrier. But that's just a way for you to get a hold of us if you would rather text us your story than email it. You can also, if you have any thoughts or comments on the show, you can send it there as well. People have been using it, and it's so cool. Whenever I see a text message come in or a voicemail come in, it's a huge thrill. So that's again, awesome. It's really great. So again, that's the ghost line at 1-888-588-6920 or text at 925-553-4789. Given the absolute shitstorm that the world is in right now, I think we can probably skip pimping the merch.
Yeah, I think we're good.
And also, if anyone has ordered anything from the Big Cartel store, I think I've been in touch with everyone. But again, because of Turducken, we can't ship out any of your Big Cartel orders yet. So the store is on pause right now. And if you do have an order in, you can absolutely request a refund. Get in touch. Yep. Otherwise, we'll ship it out to you as soon as the mail. Well, A, as soon as I'm out of prison here. And B, the downside to having all this shit at my place. And B, as soon as the mail opens up again. But we're trying to keep things going as normally as possible here on the show. You know, there are some things that just the real world has to be in good working order to work. And that, unfortunately, is one of them. So we'll worry about pimping all that crap later. Although we do appreciate your 5-star reviews on iTunes or anywhere else you can rate the podcast. It just helps bump our numbers, hopefully put the show in front of a few more people. And we've seen a few 5-star reviews come through, and we're so thrilled. We really, really appreciate it. We've seen a couple 1-stars, too, but that's okay. Our theme song, Radio, Into the Darkness We Go, is performed and composed by Peter of Pedzonta Music. You can find more from him at soundcloud.com/therealpedzontamusic. Our story's theme is The Future Belongs to Them Now by Hexagram. Find more from them anywhere you stream your music by searching Hexagram. That's Hexagram with 2 X's, not 3. Those songs are also available as digital rewards for patrons at the $10 level and above. You'll get the MP3 files, which you can use as a ringtone or just to listen to. The songs are not available anywhere else. Finally, all other music and sound effects on this show are provided courtesy of Epidemic Sound. If you're looking for pod-safe music or sound effects for your next project, head on over to epidemicsound.com and check them out. I guess that's going to do it.
Yeah.
Take care of each other, folks. Yeah, the world is a kooky place right now, but we're going to get through it.
Turducken's not forever.
Turducken is not forever.
Well, not on this level. Anyway.
No, that's it.
And thanks again to everyone for sending in all those awesome stories. We sure appreciate it.
We really do. We appreciate it so, so much. And thanks, too, to everyone who sent me lovely birthday wishes. That was very cool. That made it.
Now you're 48.
I think it's 49.
Oh, you're older than me.
I feel it sometimes. My body's not quite as broken and shitty, but I still feel it.
No, I'm pretty lucky that way.
Uniquely blessed. The luck of the Irish, if you will. All right. Thanks again, folks. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another show, and until then,
into the darkness we go. Just click on balls, balls, balls. It'll take me right there. Perfect. Okay. We're good to go.
You're welcome. Oh, my upstairs neighbors have moved in early, I guess.
Oh, good.
No, I miss having the old lady.
Oh.
Yeah, they are not as quiet as she was.
Weird.
All right, your internet is still garbage, but that's okay. These nuts.
No, stop.
It's never happened to me before. They're like, come on, guys. Let's get to work. What
Everything,
was that?
That's Randy. Everything's fine.
We're deep in the weeds here.
We really are. We don't really know, so.
Not a clue. We're handsome, but we're not smart.
That's right.
Well, I wouldn't want you to miss out on the experience. I can fart right into the microphone, too, if you like.
Oh, I'm good.
You sure? I mean, I it's no trouble. I just fall asleep watching Body Melt or whatever, and then wake up about 3 or 4 sometimes. One day, I actually woke up at 6.
Oh, brutal.
Went and climbed into bed. Why does my back hurt? I can't figure it out.
So weird.
Quel mystère.
The cat is now outside the door calling for me. I don't know.
Oh, good. Yeah, I can hear it.
I can throw him down the stairs.
I really don't throw him down the stairs.
You tell him to do something and he looks at you like, you're not my real dad.
That's right.
I do what I want.
Just for that, I'm going to York in your shoes.
Exactly. It's nighttime and the only... Stop it. Like, I don't have enough distraction.
Sorry, I can...
Fucking cat booting up the computer. Seriously, he's sitting over there looking at me like, you're a loser.
You might be projecting a little bit here.
No, I'm not. Shut up.
I'm getting a dream sensation that something's very wrong with you.
Yeah, really, eh? I think I need to check in with you.
Oh, no, no. This is when I start ignoring it.
Oh,
I'm a man. I'm a man.
Go.
We there ignore our problems.
Exactly.
Was that the door or Randy?
That was Randy.
Okay.
You're not walking on my computer, and if you sit your ass down, I'll pet you. You hear what I said? Sit your ass down. No, don't climb me. I have degrees in a PDME. You bastard. Oh, sorry. I was petting Randy. I'm like, listen to the story. I'm saying Russell, then it's mine now, so.
Doesn't sound right. Damn it. Sorry. Ian, in this household, we rustle Jimmy's.
That's... Jimmy's are to be rustled only. There's no ruffling of Jimmy's here.
That's a lifestyle choice I am not comfortable you making.
Exactly. As long as you live under my roof.
No son of mine's going to be a Jimmy ruffler.
Hey, it's Boxer.
And I'm Sarah Towns with Experience Columbus.
Did you know Columbus is home to the number one science museum in the country?
Ranked number 7 on Food and Wine's list of America's next great food cities.
And one of Condé Nast Traveler's top 10 best big cities in America.
Yes, Columbus. An Experience Columbus podcast keeps you in the know about what's happening in the Arch City.
Binge, listen to all the current episodes.
Or catch up on all things Columbus and discover what makes this city so special.
By the end, you'll be asking yourself, can all of this really exist in one city?
Yes, Columbus.